Welcome to Battery Generation, your electromobility podcast for European battery research.
Today we have a great guest for a very special topic. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mohsen Suture.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and it's a great pleasure for me.
Dr. Mohsen Suture, you are a battery material scientist at the Helmholtz Institute Ulm, the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, KIT, and part of the Institute of Theoretical Chemistry at Ulm University. In your research, you're trying to widen the understanding and design for new batteries. So that makes you not a typical researcher in the lab, since you do not actually work hands-on with these battery materials. Is that right?
That is correct. My research focuses on modeling and simulation of battery material. I develop and analyze models using computers and using theoretical understanding in order to guide experimentalists, in order to explain what's happening in a lab, and also in order to propose new material to my colleagues.
That is very interesting already in this show. I think we never actually had a theoretical researcher in this podcast. If you talk about models, battery models, I think everyone knows state of charge and state of health, these two data points that I can check in my cell phone, how degraded my battery already is or how far it is charged. Your battery models look a little bit different, right?
Exactly. So my work involves computational tools to simulate and to calculate properties of materials. I'm talking about electrolyte and interfaces in a battery. And I'm working with quantum computations. I'm working with working with artificial intelligence, with molecular dynamics, with quantum mechanics. And using all these, I try to understand fundamental of batteries and how atoms and molecules interact in battery. And then I try to go with the data, both from experimentalists and from theoreticians, and try to validate model we have. And using this validate just to propose and invent new materials to have better battery. That is our goal.
Fascinating. So I just heard a lot of buzzwords. I heard quantum, I heard AI, I heard atomic level. Just give me a brief overview. Can you actually use calculations on a quantum level to calculate something like cell capacity of a battery mix?
My work is primarily on the atomic and nanoscale. So there we try to calculate properties of materials. I'm talking about electronic properties, structural properties, and how we can use this understanding and try to transfer into the microscopic level, into the mesoscopic level, and into the real application. So we go to the atomic scale, we understand, and very important parameters such as voltages can be calculated at the atomic scale. And then you can compare it with a real battery or real application. But we need to go for microscopic phenomena and mesoscopic and to the macroscopic. And to do that, we bridge with the molecular dynamic. And this is where machine learning also came to help us. So you might be wondering how we can use machine learning. So we do at the atomic scale simulations. And then we try to train the data and create a potential. And using that potential, we go to the larger scale, and then we can evaluate how this material interacts in reality. And then this fundamental understanding, it goes to the direction of practical cell.
So let me repeat that, Mohsen. I think we need to go two steps back here. You're working with computers, you're working with a lot of data, you're developing battery models. You're actually trying to use these battery models to develop materials together with people working inside the labs, these experimentalists together with you. You guys are kind of playing ball with another and then trying to develop new materials in general. What kind of typical parameters are found in traditional battery models? Probably not within yours, but in traditional battery models that are done by theoretical people.
The key parameters include, for example, electrode potential, voltage at which reaction occurs, We can also go through ionic and electronic conductivity. For example, how easily charge transfer and moves and charge carriers into the system. We can talk about a diffusion coefficient. This is how fast, for example, ions moves through the crystal structure and through the liquid electrolyte. We can talk about reaction kinetics, the rate of electrochemical reactions, and other two important parameters, for example, thermodynamic stability, whether a material will degrade or, for example, would be stable, and finally, phase transitions. Because phase transition is a very important parameter, and this is about structural changes during cycling. You talked about your smartphone. If you remember, sometimes when you, after, for example, 6 months of a year of charging and discharging your smartphone, then you have a volume change of your battery.
Can you actually calculate how and where degradation will occur in a specific set of materials?
Degradation is one of the most difficult parameters to calculate. But with respect to the thermodynamic stability, we try to find stable structures. And then when we have good stability, our assumption is that degradation is really low.
So let us talk just a bit about the goal of these calculations. So does it maybe help to focus on promising experiments in the lab and maybe even eliminate unuseful ones? Is that a use case?
So the goal is to accelerate materials discovery and optimization of material for battery usage. We have both to help experimentalists to understand, and also we want to give them some theoretical insight before doing experiment. And then by this insight, we try to reduce the time and efforts and trial and error approaches that they have in a lab. It's a systematic theoretical approach that helps them to optimize materials and to do experiment in a much more, let's say, realistic way to get innovation and to accelerate materials discovery.
That's so interesting how you guys work together, the people inside the labs and you in front of the computer. You just mentioned it, that this is like a dream team, but in reality, Mosen, it sounds like you're directing them to look at a specific material set. So are you a dream team in reality already?
Absolutely. Successful research team in battery requires both experimentalists and theoreticians. What we are doing is kind of the loop. For example, I propose a new material, for example, new cathode material to my experimental colleagues. They synthesize that and they measure some properties and we sit together and we analyze. We compare different parameters and then we try to refine model and experiment. And this is kind of the loop that we see together. We analyze everything to finally see how material in reality would be. The success is to propose new material. Of course, sometimes we have some experiment with unexpected result. And they need a theoretician to give some insight about what is happening there. And this is also part of the job. So collaboration is, you know, is from both sides. It's not only from a theoretician to propose something.
So it's interesting. You call this a loop between experimentalists and people from theory. Could you give us an example? Do you have a specific set of materials and specific colleagues that proposed a, I don't know, any specific material for future batteries?
A few years ago, we had a descriptor for ion mobility. Ion mobility, as I said before, is one of important parameter in battery research. We propose a descriptor, and based on a descriptor, we realize that we can have a new cathode material, which shows great mobility, and also great voltages. We also evaluate stability, thermodynamic stability. We realize that this material is stable. And then we propose to them and they synthesize it in a lab and we put everything together and it was a great match between theory and experiment. So this was one example how we propose material. Sometimes also they have new insight. For example, we had a collaboration with experimentalists. And a story was about co-intercalation, when you have two different charges in a battery cell. For example, different charge carriers, both lithium or magnesium, lithium and sodium. For one of them, it was working. For one of them, it was not working properly. And a theory helped to understand why sometimes our cell is working, why not. And a story that I told you about phase transition, about degradation, about distortion, these are a lot of things that we can easily understand by simulation and modeling.
This is very fascinating because we know that for a fact you need a lot of experiments to advance in the field of battery science. And we know that that is one of the main advantages that China has over Europe because they just have more people and they have decades of past research that they already did. So what I find so interesting in what you're telling me is that maybe your method is a way of turbocharging our experiment and maybe kind of level the playing field a bit. Is that what you're doing?
Let me tell you quickly a few things about how we can go ahead for the future studies, for example. Now we have AI and we have machine learning, and as all of us use for daily life, and you can see how helpful it is. And now we bring AI into the material science. For example, a few years ago, for a simple simulation, for molecular dynamics simulation, you could spend, for example, few weeks, few months to get a result only for one system using supercomputers. But now with the help of machine learning, you can train the data and you can use them, and then you can simulate everything in a half a day. So this is incredible. And with the same accuracy of DFT or density functional theory, which is high accurate model to talk about simulations and material properties. Let me give you one example here. There was always this kind of question that what is a structure of hard carbon? What is hard carbon? Hard carbon is one of the electrodes in a sodium ion battery. For me, it just took me half a day. I, in my PC, I ran the simulation, put a lot of carbon in a random distribution, and I followed the experiment in a lab. And after a day, I got the structure of the hard carbon. So it's fascinating to see how theoretical understanding can help us to push the limits and to go beyond what we have. So it helps us to understand, and when you understand it better, then you can do it better.
So now I know the structure of hard carbon. What can I do in the lab with this knowledge?
The structure of the hard carbon depends strongly on the temperature. You go to the 1000 Kelvin, you go to the 2000 Kelvin, 3000 Kelvin, and a structure depends strongly on that. And then you can easily simulate that and to say what is the optimum structure for the hard carbon and what is the right temperature to synthesize this material. You can also bring sodium into the system to see how they interact. So optimization of material is mostly can be done in a lab. One more thing, for example, think about a material that you want to use it. And this material, sometimes you doped with some element in order to improve properties. For example, to improve stability, to improve, for example, voltages, you dope this material to get better performance. And then using theoretical understanding, you can easily talk about which percentage would be the right doping to get better performance. So these are a lot of practical application that we can easily talk about and we can easily go. And that's why merging computation into experiment is kind of fascinating stuff.
So I guess your info for the experimentalists about this carbon electrode material would then suggest a follow-up experiment, or how did that work?
So we suggest to them, they suggest to us, and just keep in your mind, most of the time what we have in a lab, it's not exactly what we have in a computer. What we are studying is kind of a perfect system, so we do not have impurities. So that's why going to, let's say, experimentalists, and experimentalists coming to us, it's kind of a very, let's say, collaborative work.
Wow, this sounds too good to be true, honestly, because I know from my experience that there is actually still a lot of battery researchers that follow the trial and error approach. You're actually drawing a perfect world where you're working in a loop with all the experimentalists in the lab. I hope that is the future. Now, today we also want to talk about one of your projects that includes a model that could actually be very, very valuable for literally every battery scientist out there working inside of the lab, because you want to make your model public, right? You want to establish a website where basically every experimentalist can type in any future battery experiment and gets a result right away.
This is one of our goals, to have a user-friendly and also publicly available data. You have a specific class of material, and you want to see what would be the effect of exchanging charge carrier, what would be the effect of exchanging transition metal or anion. So then we have databases for different class of materials, which we went through high throughput simulation, and we exchange all different anions, transition metal, and charge carriers in a periodic table. So now we have a databases, including all important parameters. And then, for example, if you want to see how this material work for my experiment, you just go there, you search for that, and then you can see what would be the voltage of this material, stability, migration barrier. So it means how much energy do you need to just transfer charges, and a lot of important parameters, it's in there.
You're telling me that you have a database, a public website at some point. It's not there, but will be there in the future, including all the numeric data for any chemical elements, compounds there is out there, possible materials for future batteries. You're telling me that there is nothing out there yet? I mean, we're talking about a battery materials calculator, basically for everyone globally. There's nothing out there yet?
Yes, we have. We have, for example, a database like Materials Project exists, but not specifically tailored for battery research. You have a crystal structure. It's really helpful, but not specifically for battery research and not providing parameters that we want and not provide any machine learning technique. So they provide crystal structure, which is available. But in my case, we have... let's say some algorithm to predict new crystal structures, crystal which is maybe exists, maybe it's not exist. And then we have a kind of machine learning that you can easily use them. And you can, for example, you want to say that I need a material with certain voltages, and it gives you all possible, let's say, materials that you can use. And even we want to go further to just bring how this material compatible with each other. And see the stability.
And once more, we're talking about electrode materials, so anode, cathode, and then also any kind of electrolyte material. We know that in solid state battery materials, there is, you know, lots and lots of different combinations you could actually use. Separator, for example. So this is a huge database.
At the moment, we have electrode material and we have solid electrolyte. So the next step would be to go through liquid electrolyte. It's a bit more complicated compared to solid, but this is a next step. This is a little bit also ambitious, but we also want to include how interfaces play a role here. So as I said, we have a story about solid electrolyte interface formation. And this is very complicated. And theoretically, no one want to touch that because it's so complicated. But now bringing machine learning and AI into the simulation just make it possible for us to understand how the solid electrolyte formation appear into the system. And more interestingly, we want to go in a direction how we can engineering this solid electrolyte interface to get better performance for the battery.
Mosen, can you just explain what you mean by interface in that context?
When you have material and you want to assemble them, for example, you have electrode and you have electrolyte, and you put them together, what is in between is the interface. So, and these interfaces play a very important role by having this inside the material, you have some concentration of charges, something we theoretically call it chemical potential. And how this chemical potential goes through the system, it is dominantly described by these interfaces. So when you have a liquid electrolyte, they call it electrical double layer. And when you have two solids and they put them and you put them together, they call it a space charge layer. And these are important features in a battery. And now we want to see how these effects and solid electrolyte interfaces can be engineered by the simulation and by modeling. And then we propose to experimentalists how to synthesize, how to control that, how to optimize that to get the better performance.
For every listener, of course, that is now deep battery research, a solid electrolyte interface, these surfaces between the materials, they actually now would give a conclusion of how degradation looks like. We don't want to go that path today, but Mosen, I think that brings us to another question. The numeric data for chemistry elements, they're out there, but don't you need the experimentalists to kind of try out the side effects of different materials reacting to another? So you're not saying we don't need the experimentalists anymore, right? That is not what you're saying.
No. Our specific aim here is a collaborative work. In order to validate our model and our understanding, we need to have experiment. So we try to understand it, and then we also need some validation from experimentalists, how, for example, these are forming and how we can control them. So as I said, this is a kind of bridging between the experiment and between theory. And when we have a perfect match, we can talk about it. Otherwise, this is only in a computer, and that one is only in a lab, and we have no point in between. So we need to put everything together.
I have to ask this calculator sounds very promising, but who's gonna pay for it, right? Are you going to capitalize on this? This sounds like very valuable information to do research. So is there going to be a platform where you have to pay, or is this completely free? And then who pays for all the computational power that's behind?
The computation is free, available for everyone. And this is one of the goals of DFG and foundation we have. But who pays is the government. They pay for us to study and to research on specific topics. And we know how valuable are all these data for experimentalists, for our future. We are looking for a sustainable future. We are looking to have better life. And someone, we have to pay for that. And someone is responsible. For us, government, they pay for us to do these researches. And think about it that we revolutionize our society by having a good battery. For example, lithium-ion battery works perfectly. And now bringing different chemistry would revolutionize our society in a very good direction for our future. It is absolutely necessary. And funding is mostly from government. And we also thank them for helping us to research further.
Now, we know there is another approach, including AI, also from Ulm, the material acceleration platform, which Professor Helge Stein has founded. They follow a bottom-up approach against your top-down approach. You basically pick out the very promising material combinations and then suggest that to experimentalists. How far can we accelerate battery material research through AI and your platform? Do you have any factor in mind that you could tell us?
Let me just quickly tell you what would be the difference between what acceleration platform is look like, but what we have done and we are going to do. So there you have a lot of experiment and a lot of measurement. And then using AI, you are trying to analyze measurement and analyze the data you have from the lab. So it's not like proposing new materials. Of course, you evaluate different materials, but this is AI to analyze measurements. For us, it's AI to analyze the data, to see what would be the most important feature and correlate with properties we want, and to accelerate the simulations. We bring AI in order to improve accuracy of the simulation and also in order to speed up, let's say, the simulation, to not spending so much time. So it's a bit different between what they are doing and what we are doing. And now we also try to have, for example, new material, propose them, and try to work on that. How it can speed up, it's a lot. As I said, when you bring that into the simulation, instead of few weeks, you need to spend few hours. So it's more than 10 times faster. And I'm pretty sure that for innovation and also for bringing new idea, is also 10 times faster. So this is just a rough number. This is not a measured one, but it's, everything is much faster and much more reliable.
And I bet you have thought about how to include your users. So at what point a battery scientist working inside the labs can actually contribute to this platform and feed in his or her data in order to to accelerate your platform even further?
The machine learning we have is for everyone. You can use your own data and then you can upload that and go through the data, apply different techniques, different machine learning to see how your data is look like. It's also a possibility to bring your data in order to comparison. We can also use your data. And more data, it means that the training we have is much more reliable. So you can also use this technique. Just you upload your data. It's user-friendly. You just go to the different machine learning techniques, and then you can see how these data will change by different features. So these are more or less for public.
Just to understand that, is the model kind of automatically improving accuracy when researchers put in their data, or do you actually need to go in there and reprogram it once in a while?
So for the accuracy of the data, so we do not improve that. So you use your data and you, for example, apply different methods in order to understand what would be the, for example, correlation between different features, between your property and the features. And then if you want to optimize, you can easily optimize, for example, with respect to the voltages, the stability, you can optimize material. But for improvement, more data, it means that you train more and you have much more accuracy. So for those who are using the machine learning techniques, more data can help to train data better and get better performance. Of course, there would be some physics-informed descriptors that can help us to get better performance and accuracy by less data. For example, by having descriptors like rotation, translation, invariants. These are something that they use in order to train the data by less input. But as I said, more input help us to get better training and better model.
That's fantastic to hear, Mosen. Do you already have a name in mind for this calculator or this platform?
This project is called Materials Intelligence Platform.
And last question for this podcast, Mosen. Where do you see the limits of feasibility? You just introduced the greatest materials platform ever, but there must be some sort of limits that you probably never reach, or not within the next, let's say, 10, 20 years, right?
Yes, you're right. We have a data availability and quality of the data. This is one of the limits we have. Computational power, this is the second limit we have. And also we have bridging between theory and experiment. So, of course, we need to collaborate more. We need to sit together more. And we need to have more researchers. We have to train them. We have to bring them into the game. For our future, we need them. So the next generation having more researchers. So these are a lot of things we need. Of course, as I said, for example, when you talk about degradation, it's a really difficult job. It's not an easy task. This is also some difficulties we have. A scalability of you have a model, you have that, but when you go to the industrial scale, it's really tough to do that. It's and for all these kind of things, we need to get rid of these limitations. And as soon as we have better computational power, we have better data, and we have next generation with a lot of new ideas. They come to rescue us, and I'm pretty sure that they can invent much more better future compared to what we are living at the moment.
For all the researchers that have been listening now to this podcast, Mosen, where can I find your project online, the Materials Intelligence Platform? Do you have any URL for us or a GitHub project link?
Yes, we have a GitHub project. It will be published soon. Most of the simulation calculation is publicly available in Zenodo. But also we have Nomad. It's another platform that our data is there, and most of the data is publicly available. Everybody can enjoy working with machine learning, with the data scientists, and also with finding new materials and how this material we have is working for a specific target.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time and your expertise. That was Dr. Mosen Sotoudé. He is a battery materials researcher at the Helmholtz Institute Ulm and the Institute of Theoretical Chemistry at Ulm University. Dear listeners, what do you think about this new battery materials approach, bringing in AI and intelligence to our research? Just go ahead and text that under the podcast in the comment section. Thank you very much. See you next time. Bye-bye.